She's a wife, a mother, a grandmother, licensed marriage and family therapist, an educator, an eavesdropper, and emotion worker. She uses all of these skills to address the subjects that we all grapple with in this conversation with the Reluctant Therapist. And Elizabeth, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Frank. It's nice to see you on the other side of the glass today.
It's great to be here for a change.
I know. And we don't often get to have Tuesday conversations like this.
We don't. Well, maybe before 2 o'clock and after 3 o'clock.
That's true. But never do I get you in here in the moment and to kind of talk about how I came up with whatever the theme is for this week's show. Not surprisingly, there's a little bit of Thanksgiving in the show this week.
Right.
But I think the thing that it kind of is overriding my theme for this week is that I got an incredibly uncomfortable case of poison oak last week. My husband and I must have been tromping through some place where there was a lot of poison oak. I've never had it in my life, and I've hiked all my life. Never had it. And my husband usually gets it if it's there a little bit, but I have it every, like, all over my chest and up my neck and on my face, and my eyes were swollen shut. I mean, just horrific poison oak.
I'm sorry. I thought you were just sunburned.
Yeah, thank you. That's very kind of you. But, you know, I kept thinking of this, the Immanuel Kant, the philosopher's quote of, we can only know the world through the lens through which we view it. And so if we're in a place that's kind of dark or heavy or uncomfortable, we tend to look out at the world and see things as dark and heavy and uncomfortable. And when we feel wonderful and great and hopeful, we tend to look out and see the world differently. It's all the same world. It's just our lens that impacts how we see it. And I keep thinking of that because as I was putting together my notes for the show and where I wanted to go with it, I kept feeling the more shadowy, dark piece of the Thanksgiving conversation. And I'm sure that it has a lot to do with how physically uncomfortable I feel. And this, like, voice in the back of my head saying, you know, have you been bad? are you being smited for bad deeds? Like, this is my vanity being, you know, put into check? Because I definitely have had humblings of not wanting to be out in public. Like, all of those things have been coming up along with the idea of, what does this mean, this Thanksgiving? And then, I don't know if I told you, but I went to Chicago to visit my daughter Kelly last weekend. She's not coming home for Thanksgiving, so Chris and I decided to fly there and visit her, and she was in a show, and so that was a lot of fun. But of course, I felt so self-conscious everywhere, but I had to be in public because she wanted to take us all around. I mean, we were everywhere around the city and out to dinners and seeing her friends. And again, if I had any pride or vanity going into this trip, it just it had to be gone because I was out there. But what struck me, and it does whenever I travel, is how much I love the people that I come into contact with in the world. All the people I had conversations with, her friends and coworkers, and just the people that I randomly started conversations with because, you know, I'm an eavesdropper and I love to jump into conversations. And then it all ended with our Uber driver to the airport was this young man from India. And we had the most phenomenal bonding conversation with him for the hour-long ride. And at the end, he invited my husband to come to his family's town in India and meet everyone. And, like, all I kept thinking was, this is the kind of conversations that need to happen every day. It's tough on the Central Coast because we don't have a lot of rich diversity in cultures and backgrounds, but Chicago is nothing but rich diversity and culture people embracing each other's differences and loving it. So that's on my mind. And then, of course, I'm fielding all of the text messages from my family that's on their way to the Central Coast. I am the hostess of Thanksgiving every year, which I love. So everyone's arriving, and I'm starting to think about my family and how everyone's going to get along and, you know, what kind of activities we'll be doing and whether they'll think I'm just bossy or if they like participating in all of the things I have planned. So all of those things are kind of floating around in my head. And as I said, it's all being experienced through this lens of kind of dark heaviness. And, you know, if to be honest, if I look back over this whole year, looking back to Thanksgiving from last year, this year has been darker for me than most years. Mm-hmm. Like, in hindsight, I felt heavier and more burdened by everything that's going on in the world and carrying the heaviness of my friends and my colleagues and my students and just feeling that. I feel like I've had a lot of joyful things that have occurred, but the overall theme goes along with my poison-oaked face. It feels uncomfortable. My world feels more uncomfortable than it feels comfortable. And so coming into Thanksgiving and kind of the challenging history of Thanksgiving, I'm having mixed emotions about what we actually are celebrating on Thursday. So before I go down my rabbit hole, what does Thanksgiving mean to you? Where are you at this time of year in your head and your feelings?
It's well, this year, and typically it revolves around family, and that's happening again this year when my son Paul is on the East Coast and is actually going to Singapore for Thanksgiving. And Brian and his family's here, and our extended family, which means his mom and an ex-wife and just a bunch of us all get together. There's a four-year-old grandson in the mix too, so that adds a certain lively, thankful part of the whole Thanksgiving day and spirit that we have, and that's where we kind of concentrate.
And so do you feel excited about Thursday? Like, do you look forward to the gathering of all of your people?
Yes, actually. Mm-hmm. It's fun. We have a great time. We all get along, and there's lots to be thankful for in the confines of
your
house.
Circle. Yeah. And to make sure, yes, in the confines of your home, there are a lot of things. Mm-hmm. And you mentioned your grandson. You know, there is kind of that element of hope for the future when you have young people. And they bring such enthusiasm to the celebrations and wanting it to be, we as grandparents want it to be fun and memorable for them, because those memories we create around these holidays stay with them for life. Because I'm sure you have fond memories of your childhood holidays. I carry fond memories of my childhood holidays. Yeah. And those are the things that form our adult experience. So like you, I'm thinking of my two-year-old granddaughter and really wanting things to happen that make her feel warm and loved and secure so that she carries those feelings mm-hmm. through her life. There's pressure in that to instill in our children resilience and strength. And that happens in our family gatherings. Those traditions.
I think so. It's also part of being thankful is part of this job that we have at KCBX, because we're thankful. We're here because of everyone who supports us. And that support when things are really down rallies, and it's helpful for us as far as how we are perceiving things, because we see how many people really come forward and appreciate what we're trying to do and what we're doing on a day in and day out basis.
That's a good point, because there has been such strong support from the community over the last year mm-hmm. that it does feel like we're doing something that is resonating and is important for other people. And that is something to be thankful for. I agree. Because I think when things are going really well, it's easy to take things like NPR, KCBX for granted, or relationships for granted, or clean water or clean right. air for granted. Maybe it's these moments of trials and tribulations that make us step back and say, it's not enough just to be thankful. We need to be active as well.
Yeah.
So that's... I'm glad you brought in kind of your hopeful piece of it, because although I feel like there is the sense of gratitude living inside of me somewhere, and that there is a Thanksgiving spirit living inside of me somewhere, I want to talk a bit today about kind of the complex history of Thanksgiving and why we do set aside this last Thursday of November every year to honor or look at or even celebrate Thanksgiving. And we'll be opening up the phone lines to take your call in a few minutes at 805-781-3875. You can also be part of the conversation by liking our Facebook page, The Reluctant Therapist. You can find more about the show at our website, thereluctanttherapist.com. You can listen to previous shows at kcbx.org under the News Talk tab, or right at the top there. Bree updates our shows week after week, and This is Bree's last week here with me, so I'm really sad. I don't know who will be updating the shows, but we're going to be wishing Bree well as she sets out to her new adventure working in Reno. I think they're lucky to have her. We will miss her, but she's going to do fabulously. But you can listen to those previous shows at kcbx.org. You can also podcast the show by going to Apple Podcasts or NPR One, search for A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist, and subscribe, and the shows will be uploaded to your device to listen at your convenience. And as always, I look forward to having this conversation today, no matter what direction it goes. I look forward to hearing your two cents worth. We'll be back in a moment to start the conversation and to take your calls.
Country music singers have always been a real close family, but lately some of my kinfolk have disowned a few others than me. I guess it's because I kind of changed my direction. Lord, I guess I went and broke their family tradition. They get on me, want to know, Hank, why do you drink? Hank, why do you roll smoke? Why must you live out the song that you wrote? Over and over, everybody made my prediction. So if I get stoned, I'm just carrying on an old family tradition.
I'm Elizabeth Barrett. This is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. You're listening to Public Radio, KCBX. And let's talk about those family traditions. Let's talk about Thanksgiving. Let's talk about the darker side of this celebration that we all participate in each year. It's interesting because I try to do research on the shows every week so that I have enough to bring to the conversation to kind of stimulate discussion in many different areas. And I have to say that I learned a few things about Thanksgiving that I didn't know today, thanks to my daughter Kelly, when I was talking to her about how hard it's been for me to rally excitement about celebrating anything, because I feel like we're just being swamped with bad news over and over. And I feel like it's been a theme the entire year about trying to absorb bad news and then carry on again and absorb bad news and carry on again. And it just gets heavier and heavier. And you know, I just really felt the ultimate straw and camel's back experience when Al Franken hit the news this week. And I thought, really? One of the people that's actually out there fighting and speaking up and not backing down, this is going to be cut off at the knees. And then on top of that, the news of President Trump's decision about trophy hunting and elephants and the pictures on Facebook of people posting of elephants and elephant babies. It's like, I don't even know where to put all of those sad, hurtful feelings inside of me. At some point, I just have no place to go. So I started thinking, well, this will be good. The Salvation will be our Thanksgiving show. We'll have everyone call in and talk about the things they're thankful for. It'll be upbeat, and we'll carry on into the holiday with this sense of hopefulness. But the clinician in me said, you can't just pile good feelings on top of difficult feelings and expect it to be okay. Because we have to make room for the good feelings. We have to acknowledge the heavy and the dark and the difficult and the painful and notice that they're there and talk about them and either be at peace with them, accept the reality of the darker things in life, or acknowledge them in some way, mourn them in order to make space for the good things that are still out there. And when we don't acknowledge the darker side of things, the darker stories, we are blocking our ability to feel good feelings. So instead of doing, you know, a clinician's bow tying onto the way life is now, and just saying, hey, it's all going to be great. Let's have a celebratory Thursday. I want to talk a little bit about some of the harder parts of Thanksgiving and see if we can make space for those things that go well. But before I jump into my thoughts about it, let's talk to Rosemary, because clearly she had some ideas in the opening moments of the show. Hi, Rosemary. What's on your mind?
Hi.
What's on your mind today?
Oh, well, I can't pass up one opportunity. I was a hospital nurse locally, and I'm so sorry you have poison oak.
Thank you.
But my comment here is for any hiker to be aware of what poison oak looks like in all seasons, because in the hospital I saw people who didn't have it on their skin, but they had it internally because they used twigs of the poison oak to, you know, roast their hot dogs and marshmallows, and now their digestive system was looking like what your face or chest look like.
Well, now I feel thankful.
They breathed in a campfire that was, you know, again, twigs and wood that they shouldn't have used because the smoke was then ingested. You can be very, very ill. So yours was topical.
Yes.
And although I'm not going to say, hey, you're the lucky one, just know what it looks like in all seasons.
Thank you, Rosemary. I appreciate that, because now I'm feeling a little better about my sense of misery, my feelings of misery.
Yeah, you can be really, really sick inside. But my comment about Thanksgiving is that I'm just back a week from going to England. I met my husband there in 1984. We married the next year, 1985, and his family just adopted me. And so we went back and forth for many years to England to family events. I saw three of the grandchildren from babyhood. And now I know the five great-grandchildren. And although they don't celebrate Thanksgiving, we did have a family wedding of one of the grandsons. And he actually honored me by having me read like a blessing of the hands during the ceremony. And I was the only American present at this wedding. So it was a little, you know, I thought, okay, I'm going to stand out. But it was the feeling of family inclusiveness that you would get at a Thanksgiving meal with the great-grandchildren there at the wedding, all the grandchildren, his children. My husband Neville was, you know, he really opened up my horizons to a whole different culture, if you will, because I was born in Mexico. We didn't celebrate Thanksgiving there, but then we came to America and we adopted the American Thanksgiving. So it's like I've been so blessed with all these different cultures.
And I appreciate you bringing the positive feelings about it, because I think that's ultimately what we all hope for with this Thanksgiving celebration, is that sense of growing our family connections, not limiting them, but expanding and opening our horizons to extended family and to people with different traditions, and to not limiting ourselves to our, you know, maybe our nuclear family, but bringing in cousins and aunts and extended family. And as Frank was saying, there's ex-wives at their dinners and stepchildren, and everyone has a seat at the table. And I think that's a beautiful part of the whole day.
Yes, and we also leave one chair empty to symbolize anybody who is no longer present. Mm. And not, it's more from death. Mm-hmm. But not because they're ostracized or anything. And that's something that the family does too.
I like that tradition. Thank you, Rosemary. Thank you for calling in with your tidbits today.
Okay. Happy Thanksgiving to
you all. Thanksgiving. Thank you. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. This is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. And all right, so go with me just a little bit down the rabbit hole of Thanksgiving, and then we can come back to the things that I feel deep down in my heart, the goodness, the joy in knowing that my family's all driving here and they're going to be at the house and we're going to have great food and fun conversations and a hike and playing rock band, like all the things that I do love about it. But it's hard for me to enjoy it knowing more of the history. So here are the things that I learned that I didn't know. Although many of us know the story of Thanksgiving with the original pilgrims, and there were the Native Americans, Native peoples came and brought food, and it was kind of a celebration of the truce that they had between the settlers, the pilgrims, and the Native peoples of this area. But also part of this feast was because the pilgrims were really struggling through those first early winters and were having a hard time growing crops and understanding what would grow in this area and getting settled. And so the Native peoples, Indigenous peoples, were bringing food to help them get through the winter. And it became kind of a three-day-long celebration. But the thing that isn't talked about, like, that's the part we know, right, about the pilgrims and the Native Americans, or we'd say the pilgrims and the Indians at the time. But what isn't talked about is that the other thing that was being celebrated at that time was the return of the militia, who had gone out and slaughtered 700 Native peoples that had been considered a threat to the pilgrim colony. And they were celebrating their return, their safe return, but not acknowledging what they had gone out and done. The other part that isn't really talked about is that all of the land, the goodwill, the sharing that was the original intention of the early Thanksgiving feasts, which were about celebrating a good harvest, kind of from that moment forward started to go away and became then the history of expansion of European settlers into the United States and breaking of treaties and pushing Native peoples out. Like, we don't talk about what happened after that original Thanksgiving. And instead, what happened is that Thanksgiving became a proclamation by the United States Congress to honor and thank God for the blessings brought to the people who were settling the United States. And I never realized that that the original proclamations for Thanksgiving in the late 1700s were considered a day to thank God for all of his mercies to the people who had come and settled here. And what was written in 1789, it was basically it being the indispensable duty of all nations, not only to offer up their supplications to Almighty God, the giver of all good, the U.S. Congress also takes into consideration the many instances of divine goodness provided to these states by God. And so that proclamation was decreed in 1789, again by George Washington in 1795, again by John Adams in 1798 and 99. Then it skipped some years and would come back and forth. But Thanksgiving, as we know it today, was really kind of solidified through Lincoln's term in 1863. He was the one that proclaimed the last Thursday of November to be Thanksgiving, to kind of keep it on a solid day. And he saw Thanksgiving as an attempt to kind of heal the wounds of the nation, to bring about unity, but also use the same verbiage claiming or calling for a religious holiday honoring all the gifts from God. So I didn't realize the religious implications of it. I think I always knew just the school-taught version of Thanksgiving, where it was a celebration of the harvest and the feasts and the goodwill between the pilgrims and the Native peoples. So I guess even although I'm already feeling dark, it makes it really, really hard to get excited about celebrating something that is representative of kind of this continuous onslaught of negativity and bad things that have happened to the Native peoples as we've spread across the country, that the people in power have gained power and gained wealth by exploiting, using, displacing, killing those that were already here, enslaving those that were here to work the land and better the land. Like, all those things that we kind of talk about when we talk about the conflictual nature of being the United States of America, that on the surface are these good intentions and good things that we stand for and want to stand for, opportunities for all, right? The pursuit of happiness for all, the ability to enjoy religious freedom, to worship and praise in the way that you find meaningful to you and not have to follow the doctrines, the dogma of your original country. Like, all of these intended good reasons for the founding of this country are sometimes overshadowed by the day-to-day reminders of the things that are underneath how we got where we are. And I guess what just hit me so hard was seeing that 210,000 gallons of oil were just spilled in the sacred lands of South Dakota after all of the fighting and, you know, in the last year of at Standing Rock and against the Keystone XL pipeline. And again, the lack of respect, the lack of care, one for the environment, but two for the people who find this land to be sacred. It's hard to be excited to celebrate what is the essence of Thanksgiving. Like, I can show up and celebrate with my family, whom I love, and having this opportunity and a day off for all of us to get together. But I find it really hard now to muster up any real sense of, feeling solemn or honoring the deep traditions that Thanksgiving is supposed to bring to us. I feel like in some ways, instead of coming together with our families and celebrating how wonderful our families are and how wonderful things are in our lives and good things have come to us, that shouldn't we be having meals with people we don't know? Maybe we should be gathering with strangers. I mean, that was kind of the other intent of that original feast, was coming together with neighbors and to cross barriers and to build relationships. And instead of just focusing on everything's good inside of my house, so everything's right in the world, maybe there should be more focus on working to cross boundaries. And I'm not talking about like going to a homeless shelter and making dinner, but, you know, really getting to know the people that live across the street from you, or having dinner, you know, with the next door neighbor or someone that you have day-to-day contact with. That feels like that would be more inherent in what the intention is. And I really also struggle with this idea that we're going to, you know, have a holiday that thanks God, the Almighty, for blessing us with all of these good things with this land, when it wasn't a blessing. It was a takeover. It was a taking of land that belonged to other people. So that I really struggle with also. And this idea that we would toast to being blessed with all of this good fortune when there's a lot of people that aren't feeling blessed at all, that don't have access to clean air or clean water or healthy food, or can't afford to buy a turkey, or whose families are struggling or don't have families, or their families are struggling to get along and communicate. I understand that this might feel really negative for such a positive day, but if we don't look at all of that, then how can we really be thankful for what we have? Because it has to be an honest place of being thankful. Like, let's not be thankful in a way that discredits or diminishes the experiences of other people. Let me try to explain. Because I keep thinking about this tradition we have in our family where we go around the table and everyone talks about what they're thankful for, which I absolutely love. I know that my sister-in-law hates it because she gets nervous public speaking and there's 18 of us and it feels like a crowd, even though we all love and support her. I love that the youngest children always say the most raw and honest and in the moment thing that they're thankful for. I love that tradition. But part of me, in listening and thinking about what's said around the table, keeps thinking about what happens at the tables of the very wealthy and very privileged and those in power, those who are making decisions that are changing and impacting all of our lives right now. And I wonder, are we doing our children a disservice by saying, you know, let's enjoy and embrace peace and harmony and love and family and do right by others and care for others and, you know, send out good wishes and thankfulness? Because I don't think that that's probably enough of the message. You know, I think that those who are making decisions that change our lives without thought for the impact it has on millions and millions of people are telling their children, yes, be polite in the face of those that can serve you or help you or make your life better. Be a kind and gracious person, but never give an inch. Always have your best interests in heart. Make sure you always close the deal and know that you are destined to have what it is you want. Because if that's the story they're telling their progeny, right, that's the message that's being passed down in their family tradition, then how will we ever attain equality? Because the deck is stacked. You know, the 1% tells a different story, I think, to their children than the 99% tell their children. And I'm not sure where to go with that. And I'm not even sure what I would tell my children to counter that. But I sometimes wonder if playing by the rules and trying to come into things with a good-natured spirit and a good heart and being fair just makes us become more of a victim of things, that makes us more vulnerable, that in some way we have to find a way to fight the forces of evil or malintentions with forces of goodness. Like, the force of goodness has to actually be an action. So that's kind of where I'm at. Thanksgiving has a mixed feeling for me this year. And although I'm appreciative of all the efforts of the people that I love to come and be a part of it, I also feel conflicted about whether or not we should just be celebrating or if we should be doing something that's more meaningful and deeper and more broad ranged. So I'm curious to know how you feel about this. What does Thanksgiving mean to you? I mean, I'm not trying to be a downer. I guess maybe I feel like a downer, but always inside of me is this tinged feeling of hope, a belief in knowledge and education and experience, making it possible for us to tip the course of our futures by not acknowledging that things have a darker side. We continue to kind of inadvertently allow the darker nature of things to happen. So if we just call things out, if we can call BS where we see BS and say, this isn't right, and the whole foundation of many of our institutions, the whole foundations of the belief systems that we have as a country, that somehow we were ordained this land and utilize it for our intents, our personal intents or greedy purposes, was ordained to us by God. Like, when we can call BS on that and say, no, it was nothing to do with that. It was people that came to this country and saw opportunity and took that opportunity at the expense of everyone there. When we can call that out, what it is, and be honest about it, then maybe we can continue forward with a more realistic and heart-centered way of viewing the world. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. This is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'd like to know what Thanksgiving means to you. Do you think I'm going down a rabbit hole that I shouldn't bother with? Do you think we're just continuing forward the way we are and let bygones be bygones? The past is the past. Doesn't matter what the founding intent was of this country or what the thought is. We should just really embrace the goodness. I'd like to hear the counter to that. I like to have the good rise forth. I don't want to be stuck in this feeling of muck all the time, but I can't help but feel that there's a lot of muck oozing up all over us right now when it comes to what's happening in sexual assault and sexual harassment cases, what's happening in collusion in our government, what's happening with oil spilling on sacred lands. There's a lot of ugly oozing to the surface that we need to acknowledge. And then when we acknowledge it and are honest about where it came from and how we got to this place, then we have the potential for changing the course of history moving forward. I look forward to hearing from you. 805-781-3875. You're listening to Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. This is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist on Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX. And I brought up Thanksgiving, and I brought up that lens through which we see the world, that when things are going well in our lives, when we have privilege and entitlement and good food to eat and a home to live in and people that we love, the world looks like a beautiful place. That lens that Immanuel Kant talked about, through which we see the world, makes it all just feel beautiful. And I spend a good deal of my time experiencing that beauty through my lens, and I feel very fortunate that I do have that positive lens quite often. But in all honesty, the past year has probably been more dark lens than light lens, more feelings of being discouraged or concerned than feeling hopeful. But I think in today's conversation, although I acknowledge that I have had this darker lens, I feel like it's important to look at where we are and where we've come from so that we can move forward with a clean slate, with a clear lens, with an opportunity for more people to feel a part of what would be considered the blessings of being a part of this country. So what are your thoughts on this? 805-781-3875. What does Thanksgiving mean to you? Hi, Robert, you're on the air. What's on your mind?
I basically, you know, I was just listening to how you were talking about, you know, how our country, you know, came to be, and, you know, we weren't ordained this land. We took it. But kind of from my sense of feeling is, you know, that the world, pretty well all lands were taken at some point in time, and unfortunately at the cost of others. But I don't feel like that's anything that us now should feel ashamed of or should feel guilty of. But I do think it is something that, you know, we should openly acknowledge that that did happen. And, you know, I don't feel bad about the things that happened, I suppose. I guess that sounds kind of cold.
No.
But, you know, it did happen.
But so how do you feel about going forward? You know, because part of me wonders, what if another power comes in and takes over our country, or the country that we know as ours today, becomes powerful enough to buy up our land, to buy up the land, or just to take the land? How do we respond to that?
And that's tough. And I guess, you know, kind of touching on that, China has tried to do that with some of our lands, with buying up sections of Florida and stuff. But, yeah, I mean, obviously that would, you know, coming from my standpoint anyways, it would anger me. And, you know, I would do everything I could to defend my country and, you know, against anybody trying to take it from us or anything like that. And rightfully so, I do believe that that's, you know, what any other nation or any other group of people would have done at any other time that that happened. And like I said, it is unfortunate, but I kind of just feel like, you know, if we can acknowledge those things and that they did happen. Unfortunately, that's how it happened. But, you know, we move on and we get on with the next steps of our lives, you know, without just constantly thinking of the black of everything, kind of
the dark muck that I described.
Yeah, basically. Yeah.
But then, Robert, I struggle with this whole idea that 210,000 gallons of oil are just spilled in an area that is sacred, and that the highest rate of suicide is among indigenous peoples, and they have horrible access to health care. And to, like, do we not owe to the peoples that were here that we just overran the opportunity to thrive as well?
Yeah, of course. They absolutely have the, you know, the right to thrive and everything the same as any of us. But I feel that we all owe it to ourselves to make ourselves thrive. You know, I don't feel that it's anybody else's responsibility for me to thrive in my life, just the same as I don't think it's my responsibility, other than to like my children, mm-hmm. to make sure that they thrive in their lives, you know.
But if people don't have fair access to the things they need to thrive, like an education or clean water or clean air, I guess that's what I struggle with, is this idea, because it's kind of an American ideal, right, to pull yourself up by the bootstraps, and anyone can achieve if they try hard enough and work hard enough. I mean, that's a story that the rich and powerful in this country tell themselves, is that they're rich and powerful because they worked harder than everybody else. But they also had geographic advantage and, you know, generational advantage if their people came here and took over lands. But if you were overwhelmed, I don't think there are people working harder than other people and not achieving great wealth just because they, you know what I'm saying? Like, if you don't reach a sense of a level of comfort with your family, will you feel it's just because you didn't work hard enough?
To an extent, I suppose. And there's, I guess that's a way of looking at it from my perspective is, you know, I'm not comparing myself to anybody that has grown up in a, you know, much less, you know, a worse demographic area or a geographic area.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not the biggest success story on earth. You know, I'm just a working class person myself. But I did what I've done, and I can only speak for myself, I guess, in the sense that I've earned what I've got. Mm-hmm. You know, and yeah, I don't have the monetary backing, like you said, of the, you know, the one percenters that they, 90% of them that I could think of, they didn't earn what they got. They had it handed to them. Mm-hmm. Agreed.
Generational.
But
wealth.
Yeah, generational, you know, that they, you know, it was left there for them to continue on. Mm-hmm. I didn't receive any of that. You know, I came from a, you know, lower class family that was barely making it paycheck to paycheck, you know, and I didn't go through schooling or anything like that. I literally labor-wise work hard every day and, you know, want to be better than my father's, you know, how he provided for us. Mm-hmm. And so I do that. And I pull myself up out of the lower area that I came from because I didn't want to be that anymore. I didn't want to be in that place anymore. And brought myself up to where I'm comfortable anyways. And hopefully my son can continue that on, you know, to take that next step and pull himself up even further.
See, and your story is the reason that in my day-to-day, I say that I am filled with, like, loving, earnest, heart-centered, hardworking people. You're the person I have a conversation with, like, more often in my day-to-day than anybody else. And I think that's why this strong compulsion that I have inside of me to be there and fight for and stand up for those who are trying to play by the rules and do the right thing, because I would never want you to become disappointed that you played by the rules and did all the right things and then ultimately couldn't win or achieve what you wanted or get what you hoped for your son because the deck was stacked against you all along. You're the reason I want to do this show all the time, because I believe there's many more people who earnestly believe that playing by the rules is going to take them where they need to go.
And to an extent, and trust me, I've played by the rules and found out many a time that, you can't, you know, that didn't work, mm-hmm. you know.
We get wise.
There are parts that are stacked against anybody, you know, and you live and you learn and you find out that, and as unfortunate as that is, you know, there's some things that you got to strive around. And, you know, the way I can look at it too, and hopefully anybody can, is that if you do play by the rules, you live your life honestly and you can be happy with that. You know, I work hard. I do my part. And I'm satisfied with that as a whole. And anybody that doesn't play by those rules and, you know, causes harm, however, to other people or holds them down, you know, they have to live with that each night. And I don't.
You sleep well.
Yes.
So my last question, Robert, then, what does Thanksgiving mean to you personally? What does this Thursday mean to you?
Thanksgiving to me, I come from a big family and we are spread, you know, all walks of life, and we all get together and have one heck of a time, you know. It so for us and all my family, we got about 60 people coming this year. We love it for family. That's what Thanksgiving is to us, is family.
Absolutely. I wish you a joyful day, Robert.
Thank you very much. You have a happy Thanksgiving.
Thank you. Thanks for calling in. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. This is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. Our number is 805-781-3875. What does Thanksgiving mean to you? What does this Thursday, last Thursday of November, mean to you? Good or bad, indifferent or enjoy? So, Bree, today's our last day together.
I know.
I'm sad. I'm not feeling thankful for that because... It's been fun.
Yeah, it's definitely a bittersweet experience for me, this particular Thanksgiving. You know, I get to go home. I didn't get to go home last year, so I'm really thankful for that. But I am leaving a job and a place that I really love. And yeah, it's kind of, it's sad.
Well, I just want you to know that I am thankful that you've been here. And as I said at the top of the show, you're going to do great things. Reno is going to be lucky to have you. And you'll be able to have a life there, which is always a big thing. So I started the show kind of talking about my conflict around Thanksgiving. When I have no conflict around having my family come to town. I can't wait. My husband and I spent the last few days fixing up all the parts of the Wii and Rock Band so the kids can play, and cleaning up the backyard and buying food. I can't wait. I love it. I love having everyone there. I love our traditions. Even with the conflicts that live within every family, we keep overcoming. We keep coming together. We keep having the conversations. The thing I say every year during our family toast, or my toast to the family when it's my turn, is that it's easy to love people when they're on their best behavior, right? It's really easy to love and be with people when they're being joyful and easy to be around. But the true testament of love and family is to love and support each other when things aren't going well, to love and support each other when people aren't acting in their best behavior, or are struggling, or are difficult to be around. When we can find the way to love and embrace and support each other when people aren't at their best, that's the true testament of love. And that's what I strive for with my family gatherings every year, is because I feel that it's easy to let go of those family ties. It's too easy in our culture to say they're hard to be around, I'm not going to bother, or my family's too troubled, I'm not going to make the trip, or it's just too toxic. It's too hard on me. It's easy to let go of ties. It's much more difficult to find a way to stay connected and have a healthy connection, especially in a culture that says nothing else really matters about you and your happiness. So it's a struggle. 805-781-3875. Hi, Margie. What's on your mind today? What came up for you today?
I'm really responding to what the gentleman that spoke before me said about making it and pulling himself up by his bootstraps and et cetera, et cetera. I've been having conversations with people about how fortunate we are, some of us, to have been born white in a nice neighborhood to a good family that loved us, as opposed to those people who are born of a different color, to maybe drug-affected families. I mean, there are so many people that don't have that ability to, quote, pull themselves up by their bootstraps. Mm-hmm. We are the privileged. I think you are also a, quote, white, unquote, person, but you're a woman. And that presents its own problems, too. And, I want to tell you, when I read about Al Franken, I cried.
Me, too.
I could not believe it.
Me, too.
But, you know, it isn't equal for all of us. No, 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 no. It is not. And we have to, those of us who have been born lucky, we have got to do stuff, not just talk about it, but get out and do stuff and advocate for people who are not born lucky.
Well, I appreciate that, Margie. And I think one of the challenges is, what is the right steps to take? You know, is it enough to go to a march in your hometown that's already privileged, or do you have to go to the places where people are struggling? And that's what I talk a lot about in my classes with my students, because they talk a lot about wanting to study abroad and, you know, experience the world. And I said, instead of studying abroad and experience the world in a very comfortable environment sponsored by the university, why don't you go spend 6 months working in Mississippi or Alabama or in places where there's huge inequities? You know, go work at Standing Rock, volunteer your time.
Learn about
what's happening in our own country and do your service there. That would be a life-changing experience, other than, you know, traveling through the comforts of Europe. I think,
and not to mention giving back, giving, acknowledging, you know, you're talking about acknowledging, and I agree with everything that you've been saying. I've been feeling very conflicted as well, but acknowledging that I have been, for some reason, just by the luck of the stars, given the opportunity to have a good life, mm-hmm. and not have to struggle. And I mean, it makes me feel like crying, because there are so many people who, more than us, I think, mm-hmm. I know, that do not have, that were not born under those stars.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
Part of me, and I don't want to disrespect Robert, because I think what he said was very true, but for those who truly have had privileged lives, easier lives, and I count myself amongst them also, my life has been very easy, in comparison to most people. But I think it's important to start off by not pretending that my life is what it is because I somehow did something earned me this position, or that, you know, we worked harder than my neighbors or someone working in the fields and somehow were ordained and gifted this life by God. Like, that's where I struggle. Letting go of that idea that somehow we were blessed in a way that made us more special than other people, that's to me the thing that has to stop.
It does. It does. And last thing, I just finished watching on Netflix, Alias Grace.
Don't know
Margaret
it.
Atwood.
Okay.
Oh my God! I mean, talk about the extremes that we're talking about now. It was just startling. So.
I will put it on my Netflix queue.
Oh my gosh! Yes, and Margaret Atwood is just fantastic Canadian author, poetry, and also the Handmaid's Tale.
Yes,
but,
Handmaid's Tale.
Alias Grace is a lot more intense, and it's just really left me with feelings that broaden out to what is happening right now. What is happening right now? Mm-hmm. The men were okay.
I'm going to let you sit with that. We'll come back to that conversation, because over the next couple weeks.
Will. I will let you go.
Margie, thank you, though, for calling in. I always appreciate it, and have a happy Thanksgiving.
Thank you. You too.
I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and this is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist, and we're kind of pulling it together with this whole idea of Thanksgiving and what are we really going to be thankful for? What is it we really should be sharing as we go around the table? Maybe instead of toasting ourselves and our good fortunes and the blessings that have come our way, to maybe toast the luck of the draw, the luck of the stars. I don't know, Bree, what are your thoughts on our last day together? What does Thanksgiving mean to you?
Yeah, well, you've been talking about kind of the history of Thanksgiving, and it kind of got my juice is flowing in my brain a little bit, mm-hmm. and this is totally going to show my dork cards, but I'm really into family genealogy, and something that I've discovered through my studies of my own family is that, you know, I come from colonists and Civil War veterans who fought on both sides, and kind of these different parts of history that, you know, you can take pride in and you can also kind of be ashamed of. And it's been kind of interesting kind of grappling with coming to some sort of conclusion about it, you know. But I think probably the best thing I can think of is to learn my ancestors' stories and make sure I live my life in a way that won't be whitewashed in the future. Mm. You know, I wouldn't want anyone to be like, oh, she had a great life, but if you do a little more research, you know, you know.
And I think that's what Robert was stating earlier also, is that we can't live in the shame of what our ancestors or forefathers did, because then there's no place to move forward. I think that piece of acknowledgement, the mourning of how things played out in our history is important. And then the question of, but how do we then move forward? Like you said, how do I live my best life? How do I live in a way that will honor actually my seven generations forward? Because that's what I try to think about, is what are the actions I'm taking now and how are they going to impact my children, grandchildren, great-great-grandchildren going seven generations out. You know, that, I think, moving forward will have the greatest impact. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I think it's a longer conversation than just an hour, like all things
are. Oh, totally.
Are.
Yeah, I have a million other things I could say about this, but is the most eloquent I can be.
But it does make it sound like looking at our family histories and how much do we owe the future or the now based on how we got to where we are and what our family stories are. And also to remember that we all are a product of the time and place in which we're living, that we're impacted by what the social norms are of the time. We're impacted by what the cultural context is or what our circumstances are, and how we behave in different circumstances to survive may not have been in, you know, something that we'd hold up in high status, but we needed to survive. I mean, there's so much that goes into the context. So I wish you the best as you move forward. I wish you the best at Thanksgiving and being home with your family. And I wish for all of us the opportunity to be with people we love, whether it's family or friends or strangers, to look at people with our hearts open. My best experiences in the last year and all of my life are those surprise conversations I have with people that I most likely would have never had a conversation with if not thrown into interesting circumstances. And those conversations make my life feel hopeful, make me hopeful for the future, make me feel excited about what the potential is as we move forward as a country and as a people. So thank you for supporting the show. Thank you for supporting Public Radio KCBX. You can listen to previous shows at kcbx.org. You can find me at thereluctanttherapist.com. You can send me an email or find me on our Facebook page, The Reluctant Therapist. As always, I appreciate being part of the conversation, and I look forward to continuing next week with what comes our way. Here's a little family reunion from Jill Scott.
We at the family reunion, telling jokes and playing spades. Uncle Dave is on the barbecue grill. Grandma bragging about the blanket she made for the new baby on her way. Even though the daddy ain't really ready, this child is coming anyway. Yeah. Niecy made her famous potato salad. Somehow it turns out green. Maybe it's all the scallions. Could be the celery, but oh, Uncle Jerome loves it. Hey, baby, baby, here comes my favorite cousin. He says he's doing fine, taking it. Everybody tiptoeing round her. We all know she's gonna be toe up soon. Saying all the things we like to say. Hope she gets around the cousin Lonnie. Cause we all know he got a little extra. Somebody on the side. Oh,
that what happened is worse. They knocked over Eleanor's lemon cake. You know, the one she barely ever made.